Spring and Easter don't preach the same sermon. Spring promises the inevitability of relief. The cold will end on its own and the flowers will naturally bloom. But Easter tells us that wholeness won't come without work. Whereas spring says, sit still and watch the mud transform into beauty, Easter says, get busy and make friends with the hard, dry earth. Dig in and don't be afraid of blistering your hands. The pain, sorrow, and the bloody soil is not redeemed by the seeds. It is the seed. So don't run away from it. Don't wait it out. Instead, trust it. For if you do the work of befriending those wounds and that defeat, it will leave you whole. The Reverend Scott Taylor.
Greta Thunberg met the Pope this week. Perhaps you know who Greta Thunberg is, and perhaps you do not. If you do not, she is a 16-year-old Swedish high school student. When she was 8 years old, she first heard about climate change and ecological devastation, such as plastic, hurting the animals in the ocean. And she couldn't stop thinking about it, about the horror of the sea animals caught in plastic and of the danger of the ecological changes caused by climate change. The very survival of the human race and the planet was at stake. So why wasn't everyone talking about it? She simply could not figure out how world leaders had not declared a worldwide emergency. But they didn't. And after a while, she went into a severe depression and barely spoke or ate. She lost weight. Her condition was so bad that she could no longer go to school. She stayed home with her parents. And slowly she began to tell them about climate change. They were under the impression that everyone was dealing with it, that it was all, as her father said, sorted out. But they listened to what she said, and they changed. And they realized significant change was not happening fast enough. They took the issue seriously. They stopped lying. They became vegan. That's when I kind of realized I can make a difference, Greta says. And how I got out of that depression was that I thought, it's just a waste of time feeling this way because I could do so much good with my life. She went back to school and joined a group of youth who wanted to make a difference about climate change but didn't know what to do. Greta wanted to go on strike from school and stage a protest in front of Parliament. Her friends were uncomfortable skipping class and said no. And Greta didn't really think there was much point to going to school when the survival of the species and people were at stake. I painted the sign on a piece of wood, she says, and for the flyers wrote down some facts I thought everyone should know. And then I took my bike to Parliament and just sat there, she recalls. The first day I sat alone from 8:30 to 3 p.m., the regular school day. And then on the second day, people started joining me. And after that, there were people there all the time. The strike started on August 20th, just last summer. Greta and her partners stayed on strike for 3 weeks through the Swedish elections. All the while, Greta posted on Instagram and Twitter what they were doing, and news of their actions went viral. It sparked similar actions across the world. Greta was invited to speak in Europe, to heads of state, to corporate leaders, and citizens groups. She gave a widely watched TED Talk, speaking bluntly about her concerns. The message? It's time to panic. This last week, before she saw the Pope, she spoke to a committee of the European Parliament, where in her typical clear way, she said, our house is falling apart, and our leaders need to start acting accordingly. If our actual house was falling apart, our leaders wouldn't go on like you do today. You would change almost every part of your behavior, as you do in an emergency. If our house was falling apart, you wouldn't hold 3 emergency Brexit summits and no emergency summit regarding the breakdown of the climate and the environment. Greta and other students in Sweden and across the world now strike every Friday They call it Fridays for the Future. They intend to strike until their governments create policies that will stop carbon emissions. On March 15th, over 1.6 million students from 141 countries went on strike, including 1,600 students here in Portland. Another international youth strike is planned for May 24th. When Greta met the Pope, she said to him, "Thank you for standing up for climate and speaking the truth. It means a lot." "God bless you," he responded. "Continue to work. Continue. Go along. Go ahead." To me, this seems like an Easter blessing. Easter is perhaps my favorite holiday. I love how it speaks to new life, to the buds opening on trees, to flowers pushing through the cold earth and springing open with color. I love the festivities of the secular holiday, of hidden eggs and bunnies, of children laughing and seeking, of baskets filled with candy and other objects. I love it so much that for 25 years I held a huge Easter gathering at my home and sometimes had up to 25 children hunting eggs. I love the hopefulness of spring, as if the earth hums to us, "All will be well, all will be well." Spring is an exclamation to look, to remember life is a banquet, a joy, a treasure. How can we not feel the hope in the green tips of crocuses coming up through that cold, frozen earth, or trees draped in blossoms? My heart leaps in spring as if it was dormant, and now it is bursting with life. Easter should be celebrated, I believe, sung with alleluias, with gratitude, with joy. This year, however, I have come to Easter with some trepidation, because this year Easter is also Earth Day. 49 years after the first Earth Day, the situation is more dire than it was then. Mother Earth has a fever. The temperature of the fluid in her body is rising. The heat on her skin is intensifying. She is tossing and turning, not knowing how to deal with this new heat, this new energy. She's hotter than she's been in 125,000 years, and her temperature is going up. And we have not taken good care of her. Instead of seeing the earth as alive and filled with soul and spirit, in our minds we turn the earth to dead matter, to be used and consumed. We turned water and atmosphere into a dumping place for all those things we no longer wanted. We didn't know at first that Mother Earth is a system, like a body, that works in synchronicity to create the world that we live in. And after we did know, we acted like we didn't, living in denial, living with two realities, using the Earth like an object, while knowing ecosystems are more complicated than we probably can ever understand. We got addicted to the ease and the comfort and the benefits of the fossil fuel economy. With Mother Earth's fever, spring is different now. It comes earlier each year across the world. Flowers still bloom hopeful, stretching themselves wide. It is false hope, though, because the insects and birds who need those flowers for food to survive have a different biological calendar, and they miss each other. Butterflies arrive, but the flowers they need are already gone. Or at other times, the flowers bloom so early that winter comes again and freezes them out, killing them, so the people and animals who need them for food are out of luck. With temperature rising across the world, spring, while still wildly beautiful, does not offer the same hope it did that all is well. Instead, it reminds us that things are not always what they should be. The climate is in crisis. Wild animals are dying. Insect populations are plummeting. It turns out that spring isn't as hopeful as it once was, and we need a different kind of hope now. So I've been thinking a lot about community, and I've been thinking a lot about power. And since it is Easter, I've been thinking about resurrection. We need resurrection, which is metaphorically despair turned into hope. The story of Easter resurrection gives us the anatomy of resurrection. Where does hope come from when you are in despair? The story of Jesus' resurrection has been a powerful and meaningful story for billions of people for 2 millennia. When a story survives that long, it usually has a deep meaning that is true to the human spirit, and it's worth exploring what the message in that story might be. In the Easter story, the community that grew up around Jesus was shattered and in despair when he was killed. Their center was gone. When the women who went to the cave to anoint Jesus' body went there, they found the cave empty. This was a shocking surprise. They expected a dead body. They expected Jesus to be gone. They felt him gone. They were in despair. And then they saw Jesus. They did not expect him to be alive. This was also a shocking surprise. I was taught that the miracles in the Bible aren't literal, but place markers for the important bits of the story. They bounce up and down and say to us, notice this part. Jesus' friends and followers expected the goodness and power that was Jesus to be gone. They believed the movement they had been building would vanish when he vanished. Their friend and idol was gone, and so they believed with every single thing that they stood for. They were shattered and destroyed. But what they had together wasn't gone. When those who had loved Jesus gathered together and spoke their grief and spoke of his teachings, they learned that Jesus still existed. It was miraculous. Jesus still lived, not literally, but metaphorically. And it wasn't the body of Jesus that mattered. The body was gone. What mattered was the ideas and practices of Jesus. They could carry those on. They could be the body of Christ doing the work of Jesus. Resurrection happened. Jesus' teachings were resurrected in the life of the community. The community moved from despair to hope. And this is truly miraculous. Today, the principles that Jesus taught, such as loving your neighbor as yourself and caring for the least among us, are still being carried out in the name of someone who lived 2,000 years ago. How unlikely is that? Even Unitarian Universalists who long, long ago decided Jesus was not divine, never came back from the dead, never ascended bodily into heaven. And even for us, who over a century haven't held Jesus as important in our worship, uphold the values he is credited with teaching, to practice love and mercy for all. That is miraculous, and that is powerful. That is resurrection. Despair turned into a long-lived hope. I believe the Easter story tells us about 3 necessary elements for the transition from despair to hope. First, it reminds us to be open to surprise. Things are sometimes not as we expected them to be. Second, it reminds us we need community. Jesus' resurrection happened in community. They became his body. That is one of the fundamental teachings of Christianity. Third, it reminds us the stories we tell each other matter. Jesus' followers told themselves he was dead, and everything he stood for was dead, and they despaired. Then they told themselves the story that he lived, that he could be alive, and that made all the difference. Which gets us back to Greta Thunberg. She had her own journey from despair to hope. She despaired because the earth as we have known it is changing in ways that might not allow for human, animal, and plant survival. She went into a deep depression where she was not eating enough to sustain her body, a form of death. When she finally was able to speak of her despair, she found herself surprised to find community in her parents. And she realized that she had the power to make a difference. She changed her story from one of a person with no ability to affect change to a person with the ability to make change. It is easy to feel despair in the face of climate chaos and escalating climate and societal change. We witness the ice melting, sea levels rising, droughts, dangerous heat, devastating storms, people fleeing drought and sea level rise. After decades of just slightly heeding their warning, scientists tell us we now must change our whole energy and economic system across the world in just 10 years, or the devastation could be worse than we can even imagine. Meanwhile, the U.S. president and his allies deny climate change in the largest climate-emitting country in the world. Other governments are more engaged than ours, but even their timelines for zero emissions and a changed economy are typically decades out, not meeting the timeline given by scientists. So how do we get out of despair and move to hope? I think we've had the first of what I hope will be many surprises, many instances where the unexpected happens, and that surprise is Greta Thunberg and the rise of the youth. It is as someone finally said, the emperor has no clothes. The world is on fire. And people have had permission to say, yes, the emperor has no clothes. The world is on fire. School climate strikes led to the start of the Extinction Rebellion, which began worldwide acts of civil disobedience just this week, asking for governments to act as if we are actually in an emergency. In Britain, where the protests have been most intense, they have nearly shut down London, and there have been 831 arrests in just 1 week. According to the BBC, Police Commissioner Chrisetta Dick said, I have been a police officer for 36 years. I have never known an operation, a single operation, in which over 700 people have been arrested. Their demands are declarations of a climate emergency and an end to emissions by 2025, just 6 years from now. Months ago, none of these large-scale international actions seemed likely. The majority seemed inclined to be silent about the health of our planet. The message first declared by Greta Thunberg has become part of communities of protest who are willing to be arrested and inconvenienced, who are willing to act like the state of Mother Earth is an emergency. It is a message we, any of us who are worried about the state of the Earth, can take up. That community carries the message that can grow in power and in impact. The stories we typically tell about climate change are stories of despair. They are doom and inevitability. They are stories about lack of power and the lack of ability to make change. We, like Greta, can choose to tell a different story. We can tell stories of life. Did you know that Americans are increasingly worried about climate change? The story we tell ourselves is so many people don't even believe in it, we can never affect change. But that is rapidly changing, especially after the last year where there was the two scientific reports that detailed how badly this could go for the United States and other countries, and because of all the bad storms we had last year, more and more people are like, oh, this is not normal. And so there's a growing consensus that there is a problem and something should be done. People are worried. Building power is actually possible. We also have the technology right now to move to a non-fuel-based economy. We have the energy creation technology we need. We have the transportation technology we need. We have the ability to make efficient, sustainable buildings. And just this week in New York, the city council or whatever they called themselves passed legislation that all buildings, even old buildings, have to now meet low carbon emission standards. And right now, we have countries that have gone to almost 100% of their electricity from renewables. Costa Rica gets 95%, Scotland gets 98%, and Uruguay gets 100% of their electricity today from renewables. We need fast change, but that is possible too. The resources exist in our world to make the changes we need if we just apply them that way. We have not chosen to use them that way, instead believing the military is the best way to get safe, putting so many resources into military and weapons, when we are much more at risk for danger from fire and sea and storm than we are from enemy combatants. We need to change fast, and fast change can happen. The New Deal legislation that transformed the U.S. economy happened in 3 months. The United States put a person on the moon with just 10 years of effort. Uruguay moved to a renewable energy economy in 10 years. Spark modes have radically transformed the way we live, and they have only existed for 12 years. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez just released a video called A Message from the Future, which I strongly recommend to you all, that shows how the U.S. could transform our energy and economics in a short time with the Great New Deal, Green New Deal. The legislation could be passed in the first few months of the 2020 election, and we could begin enacting infrastructure changes quickly afterwards. The change we need is actually possible. All that is required is for more people to act like we are having an emergency and not act like life is usual, and that the slow change of political action will get us where we need to go. After researching this sermon, I have to tell you that I am feeling so much more hopeful, but not that spring kind of hopeful that whispers everything will be all right, which I have to say at some points in my life has been an incredible source of hope. But that's not the hope I'm feeling now. I have the Easter kind of hopeful, the kind where you have to be in community with your despair and let the hope grow as you work together, as you get your hands dirty and blistered together, making change and finding the hope. Youth all over the world aren't going to school every Friday because they don't have a future unless the world acts fast and changes. People all over the world are getting arrested because the lives they are living don't matter if the future isn't there in the way that we expect it to be. So I ask all of us, what do we do? How do we live as if there is an emergency? Today, the social justice team 2-Minute Action downstairs is an Earth Day pledge, asking people to not drive or eat meat, and also to write the legislature in Oregon to support their climate change law and to do all those things on Earth Day. And this seems like an excellent way to begin. Personally, just in this week and a half of research that I've done, I have to say that I'm giving up beef and I'm reducing my dairy and other meat because it turns out that our agriculture, particularly our meat agriculture, is a huge cause of emissions. But I actually don't think personal change is enough. Infrastructure has to change. And I am also committed to supporting local efforts to reduce emissions and to join protests to force political change. And I am only going to vote for politicians in the next election who support the Green New Deal. WOLF is a community of hope and change, and we are powerful. The Pope and Greta Thunberg blessed each other's work this week. It was a blessing of hope, Easter hope. And so I would like us to bless our work together, and let us together live a story of hope. Let us always remember that life calls us on. So we have time for conversation and questions, and Brad will bring you the mic if you wish to speak or ask a question.
Hey, so I'm not the best public speaker, but I might be a little nervous. First, I guess, since we're looking at this through the lens of Jesus, his contemporaries didn't view him as a pacifist. They thought that he was leading a revolution to overthrow the corrupt government that was oppressing his people. And, you know, at this point, we shouldn't be relying on children to change the world for us. If we look around in this room, there are very few young people here. You know, I might be one of the youngest people here, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I have children and a family, and in my children's lifetime, probably, almost certainly, our species as we know it is going to go extinct. 100 companies produce 71% of the global emissions. It's not time anymore to stop eating meat as a protest or to stop driving so much. It's time to burn down the slaughterhouses and stop traffic. Jesus said, if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. We are at a point now, and especially for this room, where there are people who don't have as much to lose. You know, if I were to get arrested in a protest stopping traffic in London, my family would not be able to continue paying rent. But for a lot of you, that's not the case. And for a lot of us, the reason that we're in the mess that we're in is because the generation before me did not take the action that was necessary to change our infrastructure and continue to allow us to live in a society that oppresses us, that allows for a few billionaires to continue protecting their interests while the rest of us continue to work harder. John Maynard Keynes, believed that by the year 2000, with workforce productivity increases, that we would only work 14-hour days. But I had to take the day off of work today so that I could come here.
Thank you.
Wrapping me up? Okay.
Good.
This conversation came up at home this morning, and I urge everyone to read this morning's Parade, because there was an article about how to stop using as many plastics as we do. And I was gratified to see that my wife and I did about half of them, but there was more to do. And I think the biggest way that we're going to refocus our efforts is to look at what we're buying in the stores, to choose glass instead of plastic jars if we can, and to avoid whenever possible the myriad of plastic packaging that seems to have taken over the world. Of course, because we want everything to be sanitary. And so I don't know the answer to how we get over that trade-off, but we're going to work on it.
I agree with the general sentiment, but also think that Jesus said several things about swords and about taking both personal and global responsibility. And I feel that we can't take a sincere stand on and judge others who are part of the problem without addressing our own part in it. We can't sign the petitions or oppose the corporations if we're not trying to live better than that ourselves. And yet, it's going to hurt for everyone one way or another. I appreciate today's message.
It's really hard. Our whole life is. I mean, I'm a person who can't sign the Earth Day pledge because I have to take my daughter to school, and there's no other way to get there but my car. And that's infrastructure. And I think the Earth Day pledge makes us realize that. Like, I literally have no other way to get my daughter to school. So.
Hi, good morning. I first of all just want to say how I love the message of hope and inspiration, because that tells me I can sit in despair all day, but then when I hear people's stories, I think things are happening. And I agree that things need to happen on this greater level. So what I want to say is that if any of you are called to organize, I will be there. I will show up. Mm-hmm. So if that is your thing, if that is what you feel called to do in what we can do in Portland, I think a lot of people will show up and do something on a greater scale.
That's right. We need Greta Thunberg everywhere.
I think there is a lot of despair regarding climate change, because there are so many things that we do in every part of our daily lives that contributes to climate change or to pollution. I mean, anytime you go anywhere, you spend gas to get to the grocery store, buy things that are wrapped in plastic that's going to end up, you know, dissolving into the ocean, but it's still there and things choke on it and die. So there's a lot of reason to not have hope, but I really appreciate the message that we can change. And I think our society has had decades of not feeling a need. I mean, like, we've been at war for 20 years. Most of my lifetime, my country has been at war, but I haven't felt the effects of it. The greatest generation, they gave up everything so that we could win that war. We can then win this war, but it's going to be a sacrifice.
Yeah, there has to be community sacrifice, because you just can't actually have a beef-based diet, as it turns out. That's what I know. Sorry, Kathy. I know.
Thank you very much for your sermon this morning. I think this is a piece of good news. What? No. Don't eat that stuff. TriMet is going to put, I think they're starting out like with 3 buses that are electrically powered, but they have a goal to have all of the buses be electrical in the near future. I don't know how long they said it would take. And your comment about driving your daughter to school, as an ex-school bus driver, we ought to get those big yellow smudge pots off the road, too. And I mean, they're awful, and there's a lot of them. And I think if enough people got together, and maybe just at the school, the PTA level or whatever, some ways to cut down on those big yellow buses could be found. Things like maybe building more smaller schools in neighborhoods, so kids that don't live in a neighborhood with a neighborhood school don't have to take one of the smudge pots.
So there's a lot of things to do locally. I think that's really, I think that's a great way to act.
I'm not a politician, and my experience of problems with change is that it comes from greed. And greed keeps us from changing, and it buys out our politicians. And I want to know what those 100 companies are, because I don't want to buy anything from them. But we have to turn away from this greed that we all are a part of.
Let's do a couple more. It's a pretty emotional topic.
I found myself thinking about another emotional topic from this week, something that hit me particularly hard because part of my family is French. We still have family in France, and I have strong, a personal emotional connection to Notre Dame. So I was watching a live stream waiting for the sound of the bell to fall, because that would mean the fire had burned the cross piece and it would destroy the facade. The bell would take down the tower. So I was just sitting there, washing dishes, watching the live stream, waiting. It kind of destroyed me for half the day. And now we know so much more survived than we were afraid was going to survive. And we can kind of all sit down and go, oh, phew. Now we're fine, and the billionaires are fixing it. The billionaires are giving all their euros, right? But there's 2 parts of that I want to talk about, which is, one is, we can't get back what we lost. There were old-growth trees that were coppiced specifically to build a cathedral. They raised those trees to build a cathedral with, and we don't do it anymore, and they're gone, and they're burnt up. They used to call it the forest, and it's gone. And every single person who contributed, because it wasn't a horrible imperialist act to build Notre Dame. Notre Dame was built by voluntary union labor, and the contributions of people who believed in it. And a lot of that has been lost, and a lot of it hasn't. We can rebuild, we can make maybe steel, whatever we can do with the roof, but it's not going to be the same. And I think we have to mourn what we've lost and acknowledge that we lost it. And then we also have to realize that we didn't not lose the whole thing by luck. It was by hard labor and by people risking their lives. There are people inside a burning building from the 14th century that is already unstable. That's why they were renovating it, risking their lives. And it was down to 10 to 30 minutes. We almost lost it. And so I just kept thinking about that, that our beautiful house is on fire. And someone has to stand in the fire and risk having stones fall on their head to save something that we can rebuild from. So.
Thank you, Felicity.
So our benediction is from Al Gore. We now have a moral challenge that is in the traditions of others that we have faced. One of the greatest poets of the last century in the United States, Wallace Stevens, wrote a line that has stayed with me. After the final no, there comes a yes, and on that yes, the future world depends. When the abolitionists started their movement, they met with no after no after no, and then came a yes. The women's suffrage and the women's rights movement met endless no's until finally there was a yes. The civil rights movement, the movement against apartheid, and more recently the movement for gay and lesbian rights, here in the United States and elsewhere, after the no comes a yes.